From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Your patience is commendable. We knew this was going to go long, but who knew we're going to go into maybe tomorrow morning, maybe even longer.
That was the Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden speaking to some supporters at another automobile rally election day evening after the polls had closed.
But look, we feel good about where we are. We really do. I'm here to tell you tonight, we believe we're on track to win this election.
Yes.
We knew because of the unprecedented early vote and the mail-in vote, that it's going to take a while. We're going to have to be patient until the hard work of tallying the votes is finished. And it ain't over till every vote is counted, every ballot is counted. It's not my place or Donald Trump's place to declare who's won this election. That's the decision of the American people. But I'm optimistic about this outcome.
President Trump also spoke to the press well after the polls had closed. His words have been the subject of much discussion in the news media Wednesday morning, and so we bring them to you in their entirety.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you very much. Please sit. Thank you. This is without question the latest news conference I've ever had. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it very much. And I want to thank the American people for their tremendous support. Millions and millions of people voted for us tonight. And a very sad group of people is trying to disenfranchise that group of people. And we won't stand for it. We will not stand for it. I want to thank the First Lady, my entire family, and Vice President Pence, Mrs. Pence, for being with us all through this. And we were getting ready for a big celebration. We were winning everything, and all of a sudden it was just called off. The results tonight have been phenomenal, and we are getting ready. I mean, literally, we were just all set to get outside and just celebrate something that was so beautiful, so good, such a vote, such a success. The citizens of this country have come out in record numbers. This is a record. There's never been anything like it. To support our incredible movement, we won states that we weren't expected to win. Florida, we didn't win it. We won it by a lot. And we won the great state of Ohio. We won Texas. We won Texas. We won Texas by 700,000 votes, and they don't even include it in the tabulations. It's also clear that we have won Georgia. We're up by 2.5% or 117,000 votes with only 7% left. They're never going to catch us. They can't catch us. Yeah. Likewise, we've clearly won North Carolina, where we're up 1.4% or 77,000 votes with only approximately 5% left. They can't catch us. We also, if you look and you see, Arizona, we have a lot of life in that. And somebody declared that it was a victory for, and maybe it will be. I mean, that's possible. But certainly there were a lot of votes out there that we could get, because we're now just coming into what they call Trump territory. I don't know what you call it, but these were friendly Trump voters. And that could be overturned. The gentleman that called it, I watched tonight, he said, well, we think it's fairly unlikely that he could catch. Well, fairly unlikely. And we don't even need it. We don't need that. That was just a state that if we would have gotten it, it would have been nice, Arizona. But there's a possibility, maybe even a good possibility. In fact, since I saw that originally, it's been changed and the numbers have substantially come down just in a small amount of votes. So we want that obviously to stay in play. But most importantly, we're winning Pennsylvania by a tremendous amount of votes. We're up 600. Think of this. We're up 690,000 votes in Pennsylvania. 690,000. These aren't even close. It's not like, oh, it's close. With 64% of the vote in, it's going to be almost impossible to catch. And we're coming into good Pennsylvania areas where they happen to like your president. I mean, it's like very good. So we'll probably expand that. We're winning Michigan, but I'll tell you, I looked at the numbers. I said, whoa. I said, wow, that's a lot. By almost 300,000 votes, and 65% of the vote is in. And we're winning Wisconsin. Now, so we're winning. We don't need all of them. We need, because when you add Texas in, which wasn't added, I spoke with the really wonderful governor of Texas just a little while ago, and Greg Abbott, he said, congratulations. He called me to congratulate me on winning Texas. I mean, we won Texas. I don't think they finished quite the tabulation, but there's no way. And it was almost complete, but he congratulated me. Then he said, by the way, what's going on? I've never seen anything like this. Can I tell you what? Nobody has. So we won by 107,000 votes with 81% of the vote. That's Michigan. So when you take those three states in particular, and you take all of the others, I mean, we have so many. We had such a big night. You just take a look at all of these states that we've won tonight. And then you take a look at the kind of margins that we've won them by. And all of a sudden, it's not like we're up 12 votes and we have 60% left. We won states, and all of a sudden, I said, what happened to the election? It's off. And we have all these announcers saying, what happened? And then they said, oh, because you know what happened? They knew they couldn't win. So they said, let's go to court. And did I predict this, Newt? Did I say this? I've been saying this from the day I heard they were going to send out tens of millions of ballots. I said exactly, because either they were going to win, or if they didn't win, they'll take us to court. So Florida was a tremendous victory, 377,000. Texas, as we said. Ohio, think of this. Ohio, a tremendous state, a big state. I love Ohio. We won by 8.1%, 461,000. Think of it. Almost 500,000 votes. North Carolina, big victory with North Carolina. And so we won there. We lead by 76,000 votes with almost nothing left. And all of a sudden, everything just stopped. This is a fraud on the American public. Yes. This is an embarrassment to our country. Yes. We were getting ready to win this election. Frankly, we did win this election. We did win this election. So our goal now is to ensure the integrity for the good of this nation. This is a very big moment. This is a major fraud in our nation. We want the law to be used in a proper manner. So we'll be going to the U.S. Supreme Court. We want all voting to stop. We don't want them to find any ballots at 4 o'clock in the morning and add them to the list, okay? It's a very sad moment. To me, this is a very sad moment. And we will win this. And we, as far as I'm concerned, we already have won it. So I just want to thank you. I want to thank all of our support. I want to thank all of the people that worked with us. And Mr. Vice President, say a few words, please. Please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I want to join you in thanking more than 60 million Americans who have already cast their vote for four more years for President Donald Trump in the White House. And while the votes continue to be counted, we're going to remain vigilant, as the president said. The right to vote has been at the center of our democracy since the founding of this nation, and we're going to protect the integrity of the vote. But I really believe with all of my heart, with the extraordinary margins, Mr. President, that you've inspired in the states that you just described, and the way that you launched this movement across the country to make America great again, I truly do believe, as you do, that we are on the road to victory and we will make America great again. Thank you, Mr. President.
As of early Wednesday, it looks like the election may hang on what happens in Pennsylvania, and that may hang on what's happened in Philadelphia. And on that note, we go to Philadelphia to speak with Professor Tony Montero. So, Squeaker, thus far, here we are Wednesday morning, and, you know, we're looking at a couple of states basically hanging in the balance with the election hanging on those. Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Georgia, North Carolina, Nevada not being called yet. And scenarios for either or Trump or Biden to end up as the candidate. And then as the president-elect. And then, of course, there is going to be the institutional resistance to this, particularly if Trump wins. The newspapers and the media and the CIA and all of the people that have been trying to run him out of office since January 20th of 2017, they're still, you know, they're now gathered at the lawn of the White House. And so they're not going to go home this afternoon, and they're not going to brunch until, you know, this is over. And, of course, it can go the other way, too, that it looks to, at least to Biden's followers and maybe even to objective observers, that Biden won. And for some reason, I don't know what the instrumentalities would be, but for some reason, the apparatus chooses Trump. And so there's all kinds of consequences and subsequent scenarios that play out depending on whether Trump wins and nobody believes it, Biden wins and nobody believes it, nobody wins.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And that's kind of where we are right now. We're in a cold civil war, a standoff. And of course, the media is attempting, the big corporate media is attempting to begin spin already. And the spin is that there are all these votes out there that haven't been counted.
Right.
And therein lies the big, and I, you know, problem is not the best word for it. The opportunity for all kinds of things, shenanigans,
mischief
to go on.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. And all of the possibilities, the three possibilities that you put up there are in play as we speak. I think the latter two, a Trump victory or something like a long set of legal and political battles, those two are the uppermost. I don't think at this point Biden is in a position to out and out win this election. I put it another way. I think Biden has lost the election substantively. Now, what will happen with all of those, quote, votes out there, end quote, over the next day or several days is where the real struggle is going to be. And it's going to be legal and it's going to be in the streets.
Yeah, it's a little early to litigate the issues, you know, here with us until we see how this develops. But certainly the fact that this whole new vote gathering and counting apparatus has been constructed in the shadow of COVID-19 and, you know, as an adjunct to this election, which has had a number of, let's say, innovations in terms of choosing the Democratic candidate, for example, with no real convention and the whole abbreviated primary process that was cut short. You know, there usually is somewhere in each state a count of how many people actually cast ballots, because you either have people that showed up at the polls, or you have absentee or mail-in ballots that were requested by people. And so you may not get all of those back, but you know how many requests you have. And so you know that the maximum number of votes as of now, as of the close of business on Election Day, is X, whatever that might be.
Right.
We don't know that here, where you've had basically ballot bombs dropped on whole communities, where they saturate almost dear occupant distribution of literally of the
absolutely
of the ballots. You don't know.
That's
if
right.
You have a city of 30,000 people and drop 30,000 ballots in the mail, how many people voted? And you may not know, depending on what the local law is in your state and or how it's been adjudicated, because some of this has been litigated already in the federal courts. I mean, we don't know how many of those are going to be counted. And so as you're looking at these numbers and that you're looking at 69% of the votes counted or 92%, there's actually possibly a big chunk of ballots that somebody's going to drop in at the last minute and say, oh, by the way, these. And that's what Trump was referring to. And that's what he's been warning about, you know, for months since they started doing this. And you can see, because there's no audit trail possible, what the problem is. And then, of course, you see what the problem is with the legitimacy in the eyes of the people who might lose over this question, because it is a valid question.
It's a very valid question. I'll just take one exception to what you said, and that was that this election was shaped by the COVID-19 virus. The COVID-19 virus was used to create a narrative of why you needed all of these absentee ballots.
I agree.
This was an election specifically designed to crush the populist movement that brought Trump to the presidency, and it seems is reelecting him. This is what this is all about. And they are not holding anything back. The only thing, because I do believe at this point that Trump has won this election.
Yeah.
Now, all of these extra ballots, I know here in Philadelphia, I know several people who have received at least two absentee ballots and did not ask for one, you know?
Wow.
So and Philadelphia is known for its corruption in terms of vote count.
Yeah.
The last election we had here, the first vote, the on the day vote was like 23 or 24% of the electorate. And then when they so-called counted the absentee votes, it went up to 31% of eligible voters voted. I mean,
right.
It was extraordinary. It was a percentage of voters that we hadn't seen in a primary in Philadelphia, and nobody knows when. And so these absentee ballots are, you know, they crush the normal electoral and voting process. I saw it with my own eyes here in Philadelphia in our last election, especially the primary vote.
Yeah. You know, and there's already some indications that we're going to see some problems in Pennsylvania in particular.
Oh, yeah.
The governor said Trump is going to lose. And so did the attorney general, who's actually partly responsible for certifying things there.
Yeah. Like he gave the Trump lawyers a stick to beat him with.
Right.
This guy, when are they all that dumb? You know,
I don't know. It's a tough call. Yeah. So, all right. So look, this is going to be what it is. And we can talk about it more tomorrow and the next day as they roll out, you know, the results or their interpretation of the results, the official results. And as people file and serve papers on each other across the country, maybe it's some entertainment value in all of that, too. We'll pull the pleadings off a pacer and maybe go through some of that. But regardless of how that plays out, there are consequences in the real world, of course. The two sides have been mobilizing, and we have found out that one side knows how to start fires, for example, in the urban setting, and throw Molotov cocktails. Another side is mobile. They have guns and pickup trucks that they can drive across the wide plains of the Midwest. There's some, a real material on the ground mobilization. I'm making light of it, but it's a little frightening, looking at where things might be headed.
Don, I always say I'm from Philadelphia. I know something about Pennsylvania. From an election political standpoint, Pennsylvania is a beast. It is a beast. But also from the standpoint of the immiseration of the working class. And I'm talking about not just the black proletariat, but the working class as a whole in the state of Pennsylvania has been immiserated. If you go to places like Butler, Pennsylvania, that used to be a thriving industrial city and now is known best for opioid deaths, overdoses, and suicide, where people who can get out are getting out. And so if you talk about what you just mentioned, there are angry people who are not going to stand by, believe me, and see their vote, quote, Trump, forgive the pun, by some politicians in Philadelphia. They're not gonna stand by and let that happen. So if you talk about where this convulsion might reach its fever pitch, its highest point, I would suggest to people, keep your eye on Pennsylvania. An elite in Philadelphia, and I do mean elite, just like we talk about the universities, the professoriate, the high-tech finance centers in Philadelphia, and then the rest of the people in the rural areas, the small, formerly industrial cities, and these people came out and voted. They put it all on the line, and they're not going to be denied. So keep your eye on Pennsylvania.
So we've got Pittsburgh, of course, and Harrisburg. I mean, there are a number of cities outside of the largest one, of course, Philadelphia. And much of it, no question, belongs to Trump. I mean, driving across the state.
No question.
Yeah. And then there's a question of, if we're going into this uncharted territory and the pressure is supposed to come from the streets, what kind of pressure would come from the streets in Philadelphia? Because it appears there wasn't very much enthusiasm for Biden over the course of the election in Philadelphia.
No, there wasn't. Least of all among what is considered the base of the Democratic Party in Pennsylvania, the black vote in Philadelphia. There was not the enthusiasm that they needed. That's why you see Trump leading by this huge number already in Pennsylvania. Who would have thought it? A 12, 13 point lead already. No, there was not enthusiasm. But there is a hidden hand, if you will, another hand of people who have been practicing going to the streets, causing chaos in the name of defending democracy and put quotes around this, Black Lives Matter, which is not about Black lives at all. So, but even in Philadelphia, they are a small part of the population, a very minute group of people. But then I would say this, Don, Philadelphia did not give Biden the votes that he needed. I mean, even among, even without the mail-in ballots and all that type of a thing, I am convinced that more people than not either did not show up or did not vote for the Democratic ticket. And we'll have to see, but that's part of the political electoral landscape the day after the election, or yeah. I don't know, is there a day after?
we're gonna find out. Yeah, I mean, as of we're talking about 6 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on Wednesday. The count in Pennsylvania is 55.8% Trump, 43.1% to Biden. We're talking like 3 million votes to Trump for about 2.3 to Biden, and it's about two-thirds of the votes are in already.
Mm-hmm. So, that's right. And the extraordinary thing, if you don't mind me interrupting you,
no.
is that Pennsylvania, up until 2016, when Trump took it narrowly, had not gone for a Republican presidential candidate in 35 years.
Right.
I mean, it's unbelievable.
This is a phenomenon that also has still been replicated in other parts of the country also. Where there are states that, you know, the Republicans never had a chance. And what it does is it lends weight to Trump's claim. I mean, I hear people laugh hysterically when he says, I'm going to turn the Republican Party into a workers' party, the so-called Marxists and such that laugh hysterically. But this is an indication of exactly that happening in terms of the view of the actual workers.
Yeah. Well, there's no question about it. The workers... more than see him as on their side, more than they see the Democrats.
Right.
And to the, you know, quote, Marxist, explain to the people, especially to the working class, and by that we're talking about a lot of labor leaders, by the way, right. explain to the working class how the Workers' Party is... the richest party in the history of the United States.
Right.
It is the party of high finance and high tech and the military.
And the intelligence agencies, the CIA and the FBI.
Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely.
And the corporate media.
That's right. And if you're comfortable living in that house, well, good for you. I am not.
Definitely.
That's not my house.
Someone at least has to go clean out the bathrooms anyway.
Oh, yeah, well, true that. I'll leave that to you, Doc.
Yes, all right. All right, so, you know, we're going to see what we see over the next day or two, and we'll come back and discuss this again maybe later today or tomorrow. Professor Montero, I thank you for your time and attention as always, and... you know, the curse is always treated as a blessing. May you live in interesting times, but I think we're about to say, maybe not.
And I can say this as a sociologist, especially if you're a sociologist that really understands what social science is.
That's right.
These are very interesting and rich moments
for
study.
That's right. Thanks a lot. We'll speak with you again soon.
Thank you, Don.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.